It started with a kiss. A kiss that shattered lives, sparked an investigation, and uncovered the darkest corners of a justice system built on silence. My name is Dean Halloway. I was once a celebrated defense attorney until the night I became the suspect. Framed for murder, hunted for the truth, caught in a storm of offshore accounts, financial corruption, and a conspiracy that ran deeper than I ever imagined. The Venice tapes revealed everything they tried to bury. The blood, the money, the betrayal. Now I'm the last man left standing between justice and the shadows. This isn't just another case. This is a reckoning. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. The kiss that shattered glass. They say the ocean holds secrets. That its waves remember the things we try to drown. Regrets. Whispers. Guilt. It was just past 10:43 p.m. on a humid Miami night when it all began. I was standing beneath the flicker of a faulty neon sign outside the Westin Bay Hotel, with the scent of sea breeze clashing against the sting of cologne and smoke. I remember the exact moment her fingers brushed mine. Jade Whitlock. High heels in one hand, phone in the other. Eyes like something between panic and poetry. She kissed me. No words. No warning. It was slow and soft, like a fuse being lit in slow motion. And even as I kissed her back, briefly, stupidly, I felt the split in the air around us, like we were crossing into a place neither of us would return from. That kiss became the photograph. That photograph became the story. And that story became the crime. I wasn't even practicing law at the time. Not officially. After walking away from the firm I'd helped build, after years battling corruption cases that left more scars than verdicts, I spent my days half drunk on espresso and half drowning in regret. Life had become a ghost town of headlines and what-ifs. That's what made the call from Jade so jarring. She didn't speak right away. There was a hesitation in her breath, like she was trying to decide if I was her lifeline or her final confession. "They're going to bury me," she whispered. "Dean, please." The next day, her fiancé, Adam Larue, was found in an empty parking lot, shot once in the back of the head. No witnesses, no security footage, no blood trail, just a single shell casing and a ring box half open beside him. And the kiss? Front page of every tabloid in South Florida. Captioned, "Justice's darling caught in midnight affair days before murder." I met Jade once before, briefly, during a legal fundraiser. She was dazzling, an ADA with a spotless record, a viral presence on Bookstagram, where she reviewed crime thrillers and cosmetic brands like they belonged in the same category, true crime stories and true red lipsticks. Her tagline read, but behind her curated filters and flawless case history was something else, something that didn't blink when her fiancé's death was declared a robbery gone wrong, something that called me. She said she was being framed. She claimed she never touched the offshore accounts authorities claimed were in her name, that she was on the verge of exposing a sinister case, something that could dismantle political careers and trigger indictments across both the judiciary and private sector. I didn't believe her at first, until I saw the red tape. They'd sealed the autopsy within 12 hours. Unusual, no toxicology report shared. Chain of custody documents were filed under private security, a violation of every transparency law in the state. The DA's office was silent. When I tried contacting two former colleagues about it, both ignored me. One sent a single word text, "Don't." It wasn't just bureaucracy. It was fear. That's when I remembered something my mentor once told me. If they rush the paperwork, someone's already paid the price. So I started digging. Carefully, quietly, I pulled Jade's financials, made calls using burner numbers, looped in a friend from my past, Elliot Chen, a forensic accountant who'd once exposed a major bank laundering scheme and barely made it out alive. Within a week, Elliot confirmed it. Someone was creating duplicate wire trails from an offshore account in Belize, transferring funds under Jade's name into a shell nonprofit called the Horizon Legacy Institute. On paper, it was a charity. In reality, a conduit, the kind used to sanitize dark money, money that funded election campaigns, bought silence, or paid for more bullets than we'll ever know. We weren't just dealing with fraud, we were dealing with a blueprint of financial corruption designed to collapse if touched. Jade was scared, but not weak. That's what confused me the most. She had enemies. That much was clear, but I couldn't tell if I was her shield or her next victim. She dropped one name before she left my apartment that night. Michael Harrow, a former U.S. attorney turned media consultant, best-selling author of Justice Unveiled, True Stories of Power and the People. He once mentored her in law school. Now, he was operating what insiders whispered was a private intelligence network under the guise of a justice think tank. I remembered him from years ago. He was brilliant. Untouchable. The kind of man who smiled while burying you under legal jargon and non-disclosure agreements. Why was Jade scared of him? Why was her fiancé found dead 72 hours after confirming an off-the-record meeting with Harrow's inner circle? Then came the warning. An envelope slid under my door at 2:17 a.m. Inside was a flash drive. No return address, just one file. Venice Tapes Preview. Mose, I played it once. That was all I needed. Audio only. Voices I recognized from courtrooms and press conferences. Names I'd defended. Names I'd fought against. But they weren't discussing law. They were discussing a plan to derail an investigation. To eliminate a journalist. To leak a fake suicide. To clean it all with legal donations and a last-minute motion sealed under the Patriot Act. I heard Jade's name. I heard mine. I couldn't sleep that night. Not because I feared for myself, but because for the first time in years, I felt like I was back inside the pulse of something real, something evil, and I knew I couldn't look away. The Venice tapes are real, and now Dean Halloway is on the list. The man behind the mirror. If chapter one was the spark, then this was the first real burn. I didn't call the police after receiving the Venice tapes. I didn't even back it up. My instinct told me that the moment I tried to move too fast, I'd vanish into bureaucracy, tied in red tape until my voice was drowned in legalese. This wasn't the kind of truth you handed to just anyone. It was a truth soaked in danger, meant to be handled like nitroglycerin carefully, quietly, and with the full understanding that one wrong move could take the whole building down. I still remember the sound of my heartbeat that morning. It didn't just thump, it warned me. My apartment windows were closed, locked, and yet there was a smell, faint but present, like someone had been inside. I swept the place three times. Nothing missing, no signs of forced entry, except for one thing. My laptop had been moved 7 inches to the left. That's when I knew. This wasn't paranoia. Someone had eyes on me now. Jade called just after sunrise. Her voice was different, less afraid, more brittle. I need to show you something, she said, in person. I met her at a local coffee house in Coconut Grove. Public, bright, cameras everywhere. We were playing it safe. She wore sunglasses and a hoodie, hair tied back, no makeup. Not the media, darling. Not the book reviewer turned justice crusader. Just a woman who looked like she hadn't slept in 3 days. She slid a folder across the table. Inside, flight logs, meeting notes, copies of sealed court transcripts from a federal case that never went to trial. The name Michael Harrow was scribbled in the margins over and over again. He coached me to cover it up, she said. Years ago, he said it would protect the integrity of the justice system. He made it sound noble. What did you cover up? Jade swallowed hard, then leaned in. A witness statement from a trafficking victim. She named a judge, two lobbyists, and a pharmaceutical executive. I was told it was hearsay, but it wasn't. She disappeared 3 weeks later. And now I'm starting to believe Adam found her, her fiancé. That's when the gears in my mind began to spin, faster than they had in years. You see, Justice Tales, Jade's Bookstagram account, was more than a brand. It was a coded archive. In her reviews, in the highlights of her posts, in the hashtags, there were trails. Embedded data, metadata. She'd been using her platform to quietly document real cases disguised as fiction. She wasn't just a whistleblower. She was weaponizing storytelling to bypass censorship, and Harrow had found out. I needed to know more about this so-called think tank, the Horizon Legacy Institute. On the surface, it was a non-profit focused on legal education, but my friend Elliot, the forensic accountant, was able to trace over $14 million in donations flowing through its accounts over the past 5 years. None of it matched its 990 disclosures. There were phantom grants, fake research programs, even stipends listed under the names of dead clerks. Buried in the financials was something worse, offshore accounts registered to U.S. District Court judges in the Virgin Islands. I'd seen corruption before, but this was rot. Later that night, I drove to Harrow's former office downtown. He wasn't there anymore. It had been converted into a strategic consulting firm front. But old habits die hard. Sometimes the ghosts of men linger in their architecture. I walked past the security desk like I belonged, rode the elevator to the 15th floor, used an expired ID badge from my former firm to bluff my way in. The office was sterile, minimalist, the kind of place meant to impress without revealing anything real, except for a single wall, a corkboard, neatly framed behind glass. It held dozens of photos, faces pinned with red thread, names scribbled in tiny handwriting beneath. Judges, journalists, politicians, all connected. At the center, Jade Whitlock, and beside her, me. Suddenly, I wasn't an ally. I was a variable, and in Harrow's world, variables were eliminated. I drove home that night looking over my shoulder at every light, every car that followed too closely. I knew I had about 48 hours before this went from bad to irreversible. That's when I heard the news. A breaking story, live on the evening feed. This just in. Attorney Dean Halloway, formerly of Simmons & Tate, has been named in an ongoing financial crimes investigation involving wire fraud, obstruction of justice, and tampering with federal evidence. My photo flashed on the screen. The kiss. That same goddamn kiss. Followed by another. My mother's address. Leaked. They were coming for me. Last, and I hadn't even scratched the surface of the Venice tapes yet. I didn't sleep that night. Instead, I sat in front of the TV, watching my name scroll across the ticker like a warning shot. The story had been flipped. I wasn't the one chasing truth. I was now its enemy. And whoever controlled the narrative controlled the outcome. I called Jade at 3 a.m. She didn't answer. At 3:17 a.m., she texted me three words. They found me. Jade has been compromised. Dean is now publicly framed. The real story is at risk of being buried by power, red tape, and betrayal. The silence protocol. The moment I read her message, they found me. Everything around me stilled. The walls. The shadows. The clock ticking just above the cracked window pane. It was like my apartment inhaled and forgot how to exhale. I texted back. No response. I called. Three rings. Then her voicemail. I knew the sound of vanishing. I'd heard it before, years ago, when a whistleblower in a pharmaceutical case I was working on disappeared overnight. One day you're chasing the truth. The next you're the headline. Then just silence. I didn't have the luxury of time, so I burned the playbook. By dawn, I had packed a small go bag, burner phones, encrypted USB drives, the Venice tapes, and a printed file of every lead I had so far. Jade's flight logs, Harrow's fake non-profit shell, court documents, every thread that connected a kiss to corruption. I couldn't trust anyone, especially not the justice system, because I was no longer on the outside looking in. I was in the crosshairs. I drove straight to Liberty Dockyard, an old container yard turned grey zone rendezvous for smugglers, ex-spies, and whistleblowers in desperate need of daylight. It was run by a man named Felix, a fixer, ex-intel, a ghost with tattoos instead of a passport. He owed me a favor. Two, actually. He looked at me through a haze of cigarette smoke. "You're early," he said, "which tells me someone's already late." I handed him Jade's last location, a ping from her GPS-tracked smartwatch. North Miami, industrial zone. Last active, 3:06 a.m. He studied the coordinates. "That's not a safe place for anyone to disappear. You sure this girl's not setting you up?" I'm not sure of anything anymore, I said. That's why I need you. An hour later, we pulled up to the edge of a locked warehouse district. The air reeked of diesel and rust. I stepped out with one hand on my concealed firearm, my mind flashing back to 1,000 courtroom testimonies, how bodies were found, how investigators pieced together timelines, how silence was almost always staged. The building looked abandoned. But the camera above the door blinked red, active. Helix looped a signal jammer through the main gate while I circled the perimeter. A side door was cracked open. Inside, the space was massive. Rows of empty crates, office chairs with their wheels missing, coffee cups left behind like ghosts of some false routine. Then I found the trail. Blood. A smear across the floor, leading to a plastic-wrapped chair. And there she was. Jade. Still breathing. Barely. Her lip was split. Wrist zip-tied, dried blood along her scalp. But her eyes, when they flicked open, they still had that fire. That refusal to break. I knelt down, pulled out my pocket knife, and cut her free. What the hell happened? Her voice rasped. They wanted access to my backups. My cloud keys. The fail-safes I told you didn't exist. They do. And they found out.
Who?
She shivered. Two men. One called himself Travis. Said he worked for Horizon Legacy. But I know a federal handler when I see one. These guys? They were trained. Government muscle hiding under non-profit branding. They're trying to erase the trail. We got her out. Felix ran interference on the way back. Jammed cameras. Rerouted traffic feeds. But I knew this was temporary. Now they'd accelerate. Now they'd move the bodies. Now they'd come for the tapes. We spent the next day laying low in a motel off Biscayne. Jade recovered slowly, sipping Gatorade and replaying everything she remembered. That's when she dropped another bomb. There's someone else. Someone inside Horizon Legacy. A whistleblower. I only know his handle, Veritas. He left breadcrumbs, sent coded messages through Bookstagram reviews. I think he's trying to leak the full Venice files. You trust him? I don't know, but he's the only one left on the inside. I had no choice but to reach out. I used one of Jade's burner accounts and sent a message to Veritas using the trigger phrase from one of his previous posts. Justice delayed is justice encrypted. The response came within 10 minutes. They already know. The countdown has started. Drop site 11th and Flagler, 2 a.m. Come alone. I didn't tell Jade. She was still healing, still bruised from a world that had kissed her once and then used her as kindling. I went alone. Flagler and 11th was dead quiet. A condemned print shop behind a boarded-up storefront. I waited exactly 5 minutes before I heard the door creak open behind me. A figure in a grey hoodie stepped out of the shadows. Average height. Voice disguised through a modulator. Eudene Halloway? I am. They know you have the tapes. Who's they? Everyone who matters. Judges. Bankers. Politicians. You think you're chasing shadows of justice. You're poking at the architecture. The entire goddamn structure. He handed me a drive. This is the full set. Everything Harrow didn't want leaked. Abuse. Laundering. Bribery. Even the fake suicides. You open this. They will come. Fast. Hard. I nodded. So why are you helping? Because I have a daughter. And I want her to grow up in a country that isn't built on silence. By the time I got back to the motel, I knew I'd crossed the point of no return. Jade was gone. The window was open. Her burner phone on the bed. And scrawled in red pen across the bathroom mirror. They want the drive. Don't come looking. Please. Jade has vanished again, voluntarily or not. Dean now holds the full Venice tapes. Every answer. Every name is and 1,000 new threats. The anatomy of a leak. I didn't sleep. I couldn't. I sat in the dark with that drive in my palm, like it was a live grenade. No label, no encryption warnings, just a faint blue glow at the tip, pulsing like a heartbeat. The full Venice tapes, names, transactions, timelines, blackmail footage, terminal diagnoses swapped for hush money, evidence scrubbed with bureaucratic bleach. This wasn't just a data leak, it was a reckoning. And now, I was the only man left holding it. Jade was gone. Again. But this time felt different. The message she left on the bathroom mirror, "Don't come looking, please," read like both a warning and a farewell. There were no signs of struggle. No blood, just her absence, and the silence it screamed into the motel walls. I wanted to believe she left on her own terms, but deep down, I knew better. Before sunrise, I drove to Elliot's place, my old friend, the forensic accountant. He lived in a rundown loft above a closed tattoo parlor, the kind of place where people wore headphones not to block out music, but to avoid hearing things they couldn't explain. When I walked in, he was already up, staring at financial records spread across his wall like a twisted family tree of corruption. He turned, eyes heavy. "You look like hell." "I brought company," I said, and handed him the drive. He plugged it in. For a moment, the room went completely still. Then the files bloomed open, thousands of folders, audio files, videos, scanned court transcripts. Some names were redacted, most weren't. It didn't take long to see the pattern. Shell companies linked to federal judges. Lobbyists laundering money through fake disaster relief nonprofits. Pharmaceutical companies bribing attorneys to dismiss wrongful death suits. But the one that hit hardest? My name. There it was. A single PDF, dated 2017. A confidential wire detailing a payment sent to a shell account in my name, without my knowledge. The money trail made it look like I'd accepted a $250 oral bribe to bury a class action case I had publicly resigned from. That case involved a children's cancer drug that was recalled after three deaths. The media had praised me for walking away, but according to this file, I'd been bought off. I staggered back like I'd taken a punch to the ribs. "They planted this," I said. Elliot looked at me. "It's deeper than that. These files weren't just collected. They were curated as insurance. Arrow and his network didn't just cover their tracks. They rewrote the map. If anyone ever turned on them, they'd become radioactive." And now I was glowing in the dark. "We downloaded copies, multiple encrypted backups." Then Elliot leaned in close and said something I'll never forget. "Dean, you realize if this goes public, it won't just destroy Harrow. It'll collapse an entire ecosystem. Legal, financial, political. You'll be branded a terrorist before you're branded a hero." I nodded. "Then we better choose the right moment to light the fuse." We decided to go analog. No cloud, no email, no leaks through anonymous Reddit forums or sketchy reporters. This needed something old school. A press conference? No. Too risky. Too slow. Then I remembered someone. Nia Latimer, investigative journalist, once hailed as the next Ida B. Wells. She vanished after exposing a biotech exec who had ties to illegal organ trafficking. I'd heard rumors she was still around, off-grid, deep web presence only, living like a ghost in Baltimore's underbelly. If anyone could handle this story and survive it, it was her. I made contact through a burner forum, sent a digital flare, used an old code phrase we once shared back when she covered the corruption beat at the Ledger. "We don't whisper to wolves," she replied within hours. "Meet me in 36. Bring proof." I flew to Baltimore that same night. She looked different. Ardent. The fire in her eyes now smoldered instead of flaring. We met in the basement of an abandoned church converted into a hacker squat. She didn't shake hands, just opened her laptop and gestured. I slid the drive across the table. She plugged it in, and as the files loaded, her mouth slowly parted. "Jesus Christ," for the next 3 hours, we dissected it. Together, she mapped connections between politicians and shell donations, rooted through Bookstagram influencer accounts. One account reviewed Harrow's book Justice Unveiled and received $90,000 through fake sponsorship deals within a month. We also found audio files, conversations between law clerks and Harrow, where he instructed them to delay justice via legal loopholes. One clip stood out. "Bureaucracy isn't a mistake, it's the perfect disguise. Red tape isn't a wall, it's a web." I looked at Naya. "You in?" She didn't even blink. "I'll go dark. Work fast. When this hits, it's going to make Watergate look like a parking violation." But the moment I left the church, I knew we'd been followed. Black SUV, two cars behind. Same make and model I'd seen outside Jade's apartment weeks before. I drove erratically, changed direction 5 times, pulled into an alleyway and doubled back on foot. They didn't follow, because they didn't need to. When I returned to Elliot's apartment the next morning, the door was open. Blood pooled across the hardwood floor, and Elliot's body, what was left of it, was slumped over his monitor. Still plugged into the Venice tapes, still protecting them with his life, Elliot is dead. The leak is real. And now the body count is rising. Dean has one shot left to finish what Elliot and Jade helped him begin. Exit strategy, Elliot's body was cold. I stood in his apartment, the coppery scent of blood folding around me like a noose. My shoes stuck to the floor where it had pooled, spreading beneath the dim glow of his monitor. The Venice tape still open like a digital confession booth. Whoever did this didn't take the drive. They didn't need to. They weren't here for the files. They were here for the message. I checked his pulse anyway, because that's what guilt makes you do. As if your hands can rewind time. As if you can press fingers into flesh and undo an execution. But I was too late. And in this world, too late is the real killer. I knew I had maybe an hour before someone found his body. An anonymous tip. A noise complaint. Maybe a neighbor suddenly remembering the smell of iron on wood. When they arrived, they'd paint me as the scene's composer. Because that's how it works when shadows of justice rot the walls. I wiped down everything I'd touched. Collected the drive. Burned every backup Elliot had made. He would have done the same for me. Then I did something I never thought I would again. I called Jade. She answered on the third ring. Her voice was low, dry, alive. I told you not to follow, and I told you I don't let people disappear for me. A long pause. Then she whispered, I'm with someone. Veritas, that name again. The ghost in the machine. He's going to help me disappear. Permanently. No, I said, Jade. We're too deep. Too many bodies. We don't hide now. We end this. She didn't argue. But she didn't agree. Either. I spent the next day watching myself unravel on national TV. Every major network had picked up the story. Dean Halloway implicated in financial crime scheme. Allegedly manipulated legal proceedings across multiple states. They ran photos of me in court. Next to the kiss. Next to grainy footage of me at the motel where Jade had first disappeared. They showed my past cases, my so-called questionable resignations, a narrative so cleanly constructed, I almost believed it myself. That's how the game is played. You build a man before you break him. And once the world sees the crack, aren't you tell them it was always there? Ear called from Baltimore. Whatever you're going to do, Dean, do it now. I've already sent portions of the Venice tapes to 3 international outlets. But the full drop? That needs to be loud. Public. Irreversible. I had an idea. The Federal Bar Conference. A nationally televised event held once a year in D. See? Where the top legal minds gather to talk ethics while sipping wine paid for with donor money. Harrow would be there, so would half the people named in the tapes. It was our only shot to pierce the veil. Getting in wasn't the hard part. I still had my credentials. Old contacts. A suit that still smelled like courtroom dust and cologne. The hard part was knowing I might not walk back out. I arrived at the conference early. I lipped past security using a judge's name I once worked a case with. Found a room upstairs. Plugged in my last remaining burner laptop. Loaded the Venice tapes. Set the live stream countdown for exactly 3:17 p.m. The same time Jade had sent her first text the night this all began. I attached a broadcast message to every major legal journal, digital platform, Newswire, a single sentence, the truth doesn't wait for permission. Then I went downstairs. The room was full of polished lies, laughter, champagne flutes, power posing in tailored suits. Harrow stood near the back, speaking to a group of young interns like a king, grooming future pawns. I walked up to him. Slowly, deliberately, he turned, smiled. Dean, he said, I was wondering when you'd show. I didn't smile back. I whispered one word. Veritas. His face froze. You have no idea what you've done, he hissed. No, I said. But you're about to. The live stream triggered. Screens all around the ballroom began flashing. Projectors mounted for keynote addresses blinked to life. And there it was, the full leak. Footage, audio, documents, voice print IDs, the entire skeleton archive of the Venice tapes, bleeding out in real time. The room exploded. Gasps, screams, phones flying up, security scrambling. Harrow tried to leave. I stepped in front of him. "You said bureaucracy was a web," I said. "Well, this is what happens when the spider gets caught in his own design." He lunged. Too late. The cameras were on. The world was watching. The days that followed were chaos. Supuestos, arrests, retirements, suicides. A sitting judge stepped down within 24 hours. Another was found dead in his yacht, with a handwritten note that simply read, "I was never clean." Nia became the story's face. Her expose trended globally. Bookstagram imploded. Jade's account, long deleted, was recovered and turned into a memorial archive. People started connecting the dots. Finally, but me, I disappeared. They still think I'm dead, or imprisoned, or hiding in some offshore villa sipping tea with Snowden. None of that is true. I'm somewhere in between. I still hear from Jade, once a year, always on the anniversary of the kiss. Sometimes, it's a single word. Other times, it's a line from a book only we read. This year, she wrote, "Leak is done. Harrow is exposed." But the shadows of justice never truly disappear. They just go deeper. And Dean is still out there, somewhere, watching the world recalibrate. The final reckoning. You'd think after everything, after the deaths, the leaks, the televised collapse of a criminal empire wearing the mask of law, I'd feel victorious. But the truth is, justice doesn't feel like a win. It feels like survival. It feels like standing in a scorched courtroom that never held a trial, with no one clapping and no flags waving, just ashes. Justice, real justice, isn't a celebration. It's what's left after you burn away every lie and still decide to stay. For months, I vanished. A ghost in the margins. Burners only. No address. No face. I didn't even shave. I wanted to forget the man I used to be. The one who wore $1,000 suits while burying evidence beneath standard procedure. Or the one who thought red tape was annoying. Not weaponized. But even in hiding, the echoes found me. Late night calls with no one on the line. Packages arriving with no sender. A USB that played a 13-second clip of Elliot's last moment alive, meant to break me. But I didn't break, because I had unfinished business. Harrow didn't rot in jail like he deserved. He pled insanity. Had the money to do it. Too. Now he sleeps in a padded room upstate, heavily medicated and surrounded by guards who were probably on his payroll 6 months ago. He still smiles, I'm told. Still whispers that this is all temporary, that the world will correct itself. But something happened that Harrow didn't plan for. The people started listening. The Venice tapes weren't just explosive, they were contagious. Nia's story birthed investigations in three countries. Judges stepped down in shame. Bookstagram influencers vanished overnight. A well-known senator retired early, after a Swiss account tied to his daughter surfaced, linked directly to Harrow's laundering chain. And the Justice Department, they finally blinked. They called it a systemic audit. I called it a funeral. One cold night, I met Jade again, in person. It was in a rundown diner in Kansas, of all places. No makeup, no disguise, just Jade and a scar above her temple she didn't bother hiding anymore. We didn't hug, we didn't cry, we just sat, like two survivors waiting for the aftershock. "Do you think we won?" she asked. I stirred my coffee. "We slowed them down." She smiled. "That's more than anyone else ever did." She told me Veritas was gone. Disappeared the same day the leak dropped. Left a note with nothing but a quote. "Justice is a house. Burn the wrong wall. And the ceiling crushes everyone." We raised our mugs to him. And to Elliot. And to all the names buried by bureaucracy and bullshit and greed. But I wasn't done. Because in the deepest folder of the Venice tapes, buried beneath legal jargon, fake charities, and trial transcripts, was a file named simply Project Obelisk. No one talked about it. Not even Nia, because it wasn't just domestic. It was global, a multi-governmental task force originally designed to fight financial crimes that had been hijacked, twisted into a shadow syndicate that allowed elites to move untraceable money across borders under the guise of justice. It involved tech companies, military contractors, and diplomatic immunity deals that couldn't be undone without triggering full-scale political collapse. This wasn't just a sinister case. This was a design, and I'd already lit the fuse. I sent Project Obelisk to 5 trusted journalists across 3 continents. One of them vanished. The others are still fighting to verify every line, every code, every dollar trail. But it's coming. The next storm. The reckoning. And when it hits, it won't be just lawyers and lobbyists caught in the fire. It'll be kings. And I'll be watching. This is my last message. Maybe you're hearing this after I'm gone. Maybe you think I was just another disgraced attorney with a hero complex. That's fine. But let this be known. The system doesn't collapse because of one man with a gun. It collapses because of 1,000 quiet acts of courage. A kiss, a leak, a whisper that dared to become a scream. If you're out there, wondering what you can do, don't wait for permission. Don't wait for justice to find you. Be the shadow. Be the fire. My name is Dean Halloway. I once kissed a woman and thought it was a mistake. It turned out to be the spark that cracked a machine built to never break. And now the machine is afraid of men like me.